Ezekiel chapter 37, one of the most familiar visions in the Bible, certainly the most familiar, I believe, in Ezekiel, where Ezekiel is transported to a dark valley, what we might describe as the valley of the shadow of death, except there is no shadow. This is the valley of death. It is a very morbid, very desolate place that Ezekiel has taken. I think most of us have a difficult time even beginning to imagine what this valley would look like. I have a better imagination, I think, than most. Gets me in trouble sometimes, but I can imagine this valley being transported and sit down, as the Bible describes, in the midst of a valley of dry bones, of dead bones. And as morbid as that sounds, this wasn't planned that way, but maybe this is a great message for the Halloween season, as Ezekiel is transported and city. It's a scene of complete and total devastation, again filled with bones, lots of bones. It's one thing to be in a valley with a bone. It's another thing to be in a valley with a couple of bones. It would even be another thing to be in a valley with a skeleton. But to be in the valley with a bunch of bones, that all of a sudden is a scene straight out of Alfred Hitchcock, The Twilight Zone or something, one of the modern thriller movies, to be dropped down and sit in a bone, in a valley full of bones. I think most of us would certainly appreciate a vision from God. We would certainly appreciate hearing a word from God. I'm also quite certain that most of us would just assume that it didn't have anything to do with a valley full of bones, and especially being set down in the middle of it. And so, but that's where Ezekiel finds himself. Now, you and I, that kind of carries with it somewhat of a little bit of a morbid curiosity about a valley filled with skeletal remains, a valley filled with all kinds of bones. And you and I can, again, I remember imagination can begin to somewhat put that that picture together, to get an idea of that scene as being set down, and everywhere you look, every direction you turn, there are skeletal remains, bones lying all around you, very dry bones, as Ezekiel describes it. But for you and I, the picture kind of ends there. It's just kind of morbid. It's somewhat perhaps disturbing. I hope that I don't give you or your children nightmares tonight, or mess up your lunch in talking about this valley full of skeletons, this valley full of bones. But as morbid, as curious as we may be about this valley, for Ezekiel, it takes on an entire new meaning as God looks at Ezekiel, says to Ezekiel, as Ezekiel stands there and looks around, and this valley surrounded by bones. And as I thought about this description that Ezekiel gives, he gives a description of a valley. Now, most of us are familiar with the concept of a valley, and you're down kind of in the low spot in the valley. The hills come up around you. And I thought about what a difference it would be if he would have said that he set him down in a plain or a desert full of bones, because you know what happens when you're on flat ground. Eventually, when you look off into the horizon because of the curve of the earth, you begin to lose sight of part of it. But when you're in the bottom of the valley and you look, and all you can see all around you are bones. What a what a horrible sight. And a lot of bones, he says, dry bones. And so here stands Ezekiel thinking, how am I getting out of this mess? And where do I step that I don't step on Uncle George's arm? Or how do I get out of this mess? And to look, and over there's a leg bone, over there's a foot bone, over there's a skull. I don't know what that part is. What a hideous scene. But then God steps in and says something that makes this scene even more hideous, even more disturbing for Ezekiel, when he says to him, "These bones are Israel." These bones represent Israel. These dead scattered bones are your nation. These dead scattered bones are your people. These bones represent all of Israel and Judah. At the time, Israel and Judah had split up. Judah was the northern kingdom, or Israel was the northern kingdom, and 10 tribes there. Judah was the southern kingdom with 2 tribes, and they couldn't even get along with each other. And over time, because of their evilness and their wickedness, their idolatry, their marrying out of their people, marrying foreigners who were worshiping other gods, because of all that sin, as God had promised. If you remember, God told the Israelites when they came out of Egypt, He said, "I'm going to give you the promised land. I'm going to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. Everywhere your foot touches, you can have this land. But if you ever turn against me, if you ever turn against my word, if you ever fail to keep my commandments, woe be unto you. I will punish you. I will reject you." And sure enough, as history tells us, the Israelites had got again involved in idolatry, all kinds of wicked practices, and God had allowed them to be conquered and driven out of their land. And so now Israel, the Jews, for the most part, many of them are in exile in Babylon. Many of them are just simply scattered to the four corners of the earth. They are scattered about, driven out of their land. Their land has been destroyed. Their homes have been destroyed. And God says, this is Israel. This is what Israel looks like. They are just a bunch of scattered, dry, dead bones. But then He says to him, He says, "Ezekiel, can these bones live?" He proceeds to tell Ezekiel that, and show Ezekiel, in fact, as he speaks of the bones, and the bones come back together, as they come back and they begin to take on flesh and muscle and skin, ultimately God breathes into those bodies life, gives them breath, and God tells Ezekiel, he lets him know, he says, "This also is Israel," and is promising Ezekiel, promising the Jews that their nation would be restored. Now we know from history, we know from other biblical books, Jeremiah writes a great deal about the dispersion of the Jews, the exile, and he says that it will last 70 years and they will be restored. And so, sure enough, we can almost track it to the date that 70 years after the exile began, in what we know as the month of July, the Israelites were allowed to return home and to begin to restore and rebuild their promised land. And so Ezekiel gets a vision of that. He sees Israel scattered out, dry bones, and he sees them brought back together. And later, history tells us that vision came true, that it was fulfilled as Israel was restored. Now, as I tell you that story, I'm pretty sure that some of you are making that jump. You're already, you're one of those kind that read the last page of the book and then go back and start over. Some of you are already reading the last page and saying, "Well, Jimmy, that's an interesting story. It's a pretty cool vision, and I'd like to have seen it. I bet that was pretty neat. See that valley full of bones, and I can see them. I've got a good enough imagination. I can see those bones gathering back up and coming together and standing up. Now I can see the meat getting back on the bones. I can see all that. I've just got that good of imagination." But some of you are sitting there, and you've already jumped ahead of me, and you're saying, "But what in the world, if that vision was 3,000 years ago, somewhere around 600 B.C., that vision was fulfilled, and Israel come back together, it's 2013. We kind of got it. You know, what's the deal? What difference does that vision make to me?" Good question. Very good question, in fact. And I will tell you that over time, a lot of people have wrestled with this particular vision. I'm not real sure why, because in the latter half of the vision, God explains the vision. There's really not a great deal to wrestle with. The question that remains is, so what's the lesson? What do we learn from this vision? Israel has been, they've already been in exile. They've already been restored. What is the lesson for me? Here it is. Let me ask you this, and we're going to look at this vision with this thought in mind. Have you ever been in a valley? Have you ever been in a situation like the Israelites? And I will guarantee you, if we could get in our time machine and we could punch in 600 B.C. and we could go back and we could land in 600 B.C. Babylon, and we could take out our microphones and our cameras, and we could walk up to the average Jew on the street and stick a microphone in his face and say, do you think you will ever see the promised land again? I would be willing to bet you that almost 100% of the people who would answer you and say, no, there's no hope. We've come too far. God has abandoned us. We've become too evil, too wicked. In fact, let me tell you how bad they were. When God actually does restore Israel to the promised land, many, and the Babylonian exile was interesting. They weren't in prison. They weren't in chains. They were allowed to have homes. They were allowed to interact. They just lived in Babylon. It was so bad that when God does intervene and God does allow the Israelites to go back to the promised land, many of them said, no thanks, we'll just stay here. This is where home is. We've got our family here. We've been living here. We're not going back to Israel. That's how far they had slid. And many of them had gotten to the point where they said, there is no hope. There is no way we will ever see the promised land again. Many of us in life, we come into situations in our life, whether it's in our marriage, whether it's in our job, whether it's in our finances, whether it's with our health, whether it's with our children, whether it's with our parents, all kinds of circumstances come along in our life where we get, as the saying goes, to the end of our rope, and we think there is no hope at the end of my rope. You've seen that thing, you've seen those signs that say, when you get to the end of the rope, tie a knot and hang on. Somebody said, I tie a knot, and somebody else cuts the rope. You know, that's kind of the way a lot of folks feel. Well, I think of the lesson that we learned from this vision. Again, obviously the message is the restoration of Israel. But here's what I want you to look at with me as we look at this vision. As we look at what God does here, and we talk about what this vision entails and what goes on. That if God can intervene in this valley, if God can intervene in this situation, I want to ask you this question. Is your valley any deeper? Is your valley so deep? Are your bones so dry and so scattered that even God can't recall them? Look with me at the pathetic situation. Look at me what's going on here as we look at this, the pathetic condition. It's an interesting vision. I'm certain that most all of us, again, would love to have a vision from God, just not this one. Just not this one, because Ezekiel, the Bible says there that God took him, and it says that he took him and he took me out, and he set me down in the midst of the valley. Now, I don't know about you, but I just kind of know me, and I'm pretty sure I'd have been all right if God wanted to show me that valley full of bones, if he would have set me up on the neighboring mountain and gave me a set of binoculars and said, look over yonder. I believe I would have been perfectly all right with that view. You know, I believe that. As a matter of fact, I believe I'd have been all right if he had just showed me his Kodak moment. I didn't even need to go there. Just pull out the slideshow. But he takes Ezekiel, it says, and sets him in the midst, in the middle of a valley filled with bones. Everywhere Ezekiel looks, every direction he turns, he's there trying to figure out a place to put his feet where he's not stepping on a bone. And if that isn't bad enough, I don't know about you, but if he didn't let me have the option of being next door, put me down in the middle, I believe I could have looked around and said, I got it, get me out of here. That's not good enough. God then takes Ezekiel, it says, and causes him to pass them round about. The bird's eye view, if you will. He takes Ezekiel and says, look around. Look at it here. I don't know, did he grab Ezekiel by the seat of the britches and pick him up and dangle him over? I don't know if he zip-lined him, parachuted him, airplane, I don't know. But somehow or another, Ezekiel gets to take in the whole view of this valley. And he tells us this. He says, when I was done, from where I was standing, it wasn't real beautiful. But when I got done, he said, I knew I was in a valley of bones, but now look what he says. He says, there were many bones, lots of bones, and they were very dry. What is Ezekiel saying when he says they were very dry? Ezekiel was saying there wasn't a sparkle of life among them. There wasn't so much as a hint. There wasn't, and again, I know it's almost lunchtime, there wasn't, let me tell you what these bones look like. They look like a chicken bone, after Renee got done with it. Y'all ain't never seen nothing to y'all. There wasn't a piece of meat on that bone. I mean, it was clean. Now, I want you to think about what he's saying right there. Think a minute. I know you're not, this is not exactly a warm and fuzzy message. And, you know, but let's think about it. You're walking down the street one day, and up ahead you see a body laying on the sidewalk. And it's obvious just from the position, the condition, that something is wrong. But what would most people do? I realize there's some that would run up and steal their billfold, but what would most people do? They'd run up and say, you're not going to be needing these sneakers anymore. You know, I know that. But most people saw a body laying on the sidewalk. They'd say, hey, they need help. And they would run over and say, you know, can I help you? Is there anything I can do? Can I call 911? Doctor, help! Something! Because there was some semblance of life. We see a body lying there. And we would think there's something that can be done. But on the other hand, you're out and you're hiking, you're camping, whatever, and you're walking through the woods, and as you walk along, you look up, and over here lays a skeleton. Whole different set of thoughts come into your mind, doesn't it? There's no help. You don't call the doctor. You don't perform CPR. You don't holler for help. You may call 911, but it's a whole different call, correct? It's a whole different mindset from walking down the street and seeing a body and seeing a skeleton. Well, think about it. Ezekiel says, I saw a valley full of old, dried out skeletons. There was no hope. There was no life. There wasn't a sparkle. You know, how many of us have stood by hospital beds and listened for just the slightest breath? Watch those meters and just for the slightest bump on the monitors. Ezekiel looked around and there was no use in checking blood pressure. There was no use in taking a pulse. There was no use in listening for the breath. There was no use in CPR. No use in mouth to mouth. These bones are dead. Long dead. Long, long dead. To the point of decay. The valley was deep. Some of you this morning, you feel like that's where you are. That things have gotten so bad, there's no hope. There's no sparkle of life. Some people are in those kind of marriages. Some people are in those kinds of relationships. Some people have those kinds of jobs where they see no hope. The pathetic condition of the bones. Second thing I see in this story is God asked Ezekiel an interesting question. God says, can these bones live? Can these bones live, Ezekiel? Look around you. You've already described them as very dry bones. Now, I don't know. Don't want to know how long it takes a human body to get to that point. But these bones are, they're dead. Graveyard dead. You know, they just haven't gotten to the graveyard yet. These bones are dry bones. And God looks at him and says, can these bones live? And Ezekiel gives what may be the best answer in the history of man. Ezekiel says, oh no. You ever know, if you don't learn nothing else this morning, let me teach you this. Sometimes the best answer you can give is, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Ezekiel says, I don't know. Think about that for a moment. As Ezekiel stands there, and all around him are these dried up bones, and God says to him, says, can they live again? And Ezekiel's standing there going, I don't know. Yeah, think about, how many of you remember that little song you learned as a kid? The ankle bones connected to the leg bones, connected to the knee bone, I don't know all my bones, you know. You know that song? I can only imagine Ezekiel standing there going, well, over there's a leg bone, I think. That's a skull. I know a skull when I see it. That might be a hand. That might be. Think about it. You're in a valley full of dry bone. Most of us couldn't be put in a room with one skeleton and left alone to put it back together, could we? We'd have the head and armpit or something. We'd have the biggest mess. You know. I'm just imagining a valley full of bones and here I am putting them back together. We're going to have to walk around with one arm this long, one like this. He's going to have to walk with a bad limp because he's going to be 6 foot tall on one side and 4 foot three on the other. Yeah. I'm going to have him all messed up. I'm going to have some guy about 6 foot four, great big old thing, and I mean he's going to have one of them little bitty heads. You know, it's going to be a mess. Think about it. Can these bones live, Ezekiel? Not if I got anything to do with it. But Lord, You know. I find it really interesting that Ezekiel didn't say, "Absolutely, Lord! I know, you know, absolutely, Lord! Take care of it!" Because Ezekiel was wise enough to know that this was a deep valley. Ezekiel was wise enough to know that the people of Israel had been wicked and sinful, and that God's judgment was being poured out on them, and had been being poured out on them. But Ezekiel was also smart enough to say, "Lord, I don't know, but I'm going to trust You. I don't know where this boat's going, but I'm going to ride it as long as You're driving here. Lord, You know what You're doing." You know, one of the wisest things we could ever learn to do is say, "Lord, I know You know what You're doing. Lord, I know You know where You're going. I know You know You're in control, You're in charge, and Lord, I'm going to trust You." But isn't it just like us when the wheels fall off, when we're in that valley full of dry bones and everything's going wrong? What do most of us do? The next thing you know, we're down there on the ground and we're putting bones together. We're trying to fix this mess. Some of you would be trying to put the bones together. The rest of you, others, will be taking a shovel and trying to clean up the mess. Ezekiel does the smartest thing, the thing we need to learn to do. "Lord, I want to trust You. My confidence is in You. I don't know how I got in this valley. I don't know how all these bones got in this valley. I don't know how we're going to get out of this mess. But You do." There's something calming and peaceful about coming to the point where you say, "Lord, You know how to get out of this valley. And I'm going to trust You." Some of you sitting here this morning, some that may listen on tape or internet, you have run your life right square into a valley of bones. You see no answer. You see no hope. It's time to take your hand off the wheel, your foot off the gas pedal, and say, "Lord, You know. I trust You." When Ezekiel does that, we see something very interesting begin to happen. Now, I don't know about your imagination, but I can see this taking place. Look at the promise that is conferred. When Ezekiel says, "Lord, I don't know, but You do. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will cause breath to enter into you." God says, here's the promise. He's been promising this for a while, actually, just nobody seemed to listen. Imagine that, nobody listening to God. He'd been telling them that He was going to restore Israel. And He says to them, He says, "I'm going to bring these bones back to life. I'm going to put muscle on those bones. I'm going to put meat on those bones. I'm going to put skin on those bones." And look what He says. Here's what really intrigues me about this passage, about this particular verse, that here, because I'm going to tell you, my imagination, it fires off like a rocket ship right here. Because I can close my eyes, and I don't know, maybe I've watched too many cartoons, but I can see those bones sliding back together across the ground. I can see hands coming together. I can see feet coming together. I can see them skeletons standing up. I can see muscle growing back and going down those bones. I can see meat, some of them more than others, growing up on those bones. I can see skin covering up that. I can see every bit of that. I don't know about my imagination's that good. I can see it. Maybe you ought to look in my ear, see if you can. But I can see it. And that's where most of us focus when we get into this verse. We get to talking about those dry bones and those bones coming back together and those muscles coming back on their skeleton and the flesh coming back and the skin coming back and those bones coming back to life. And we overlook one simple statement God makes. God says, "And you'll know that I am the Lord." We get so caught up in the valley that we get our eyes off the Lord. We get our eyes so caught up, so much attention to the bones, that we forget about the Lord. Here's what's sad. Even when things start coming back together, the muscles and the flesh and the skin coming back on those bones, we forget about the Lord. Isn't that true? Be honest. Isn't that how most people operate when they get out of the valley? When the bones come back together and the muscles get on the bones and the meat get on the bones and the skin gets on the bones? We forget all about that God we was crying to when we was in the valley. God says, I'm doing this so you can learn. Think about it. Look around your valley. Is God trying to say something to you? The prophetic condition, the prophet's confidence, the promise conferred, and the power conveyed. Look what happens. If you read the remainder of the last eight verses, verses 7 through 14, now we've got a bunch of skeletons standing up with meat and skin and muscles. And then God says to them, He says to Ezekiel, tell the wind to blow into their nostrils and give them life. We know, history tells us, that Israel, the Jews, both Judah and Israel, were scattered in bondage, in exile. They couldn't have had a family reunion if they'd have wanted to, because they had no idea where each other was. And after their 70 years of exile, just like God said, by the way, the decree went out. And Israel was reformed. And the Jews were allowed to go home. They had been a place where they were dry bones. No sign of life. Not just dry bones, very dry bones. But God spoke. And the bones came together. And their nation was rebirthed. Here's my point. Here's the lesson for us today. Let me ask you, let's just take a real quick survey. How many of you believe that story? If you don't, you're arguing with history. It's a fact outside of the Bible. Israel was dispersed and Israel was restored. If God can and did do that for Israel, if He could intervene in their valley, can't He intervene in your valley? If He could bring back together a valley of dry bones, can't He do that for you? I want you to think about what He's done for Israel over the years. Every nation, just pretty much every nation that's ever been, has done everything they could to wipe out that little nation of Israel. A nation that is smaller than almost all of the states in the United States. A nation that is almost indefensible because of its location and its geography. You can stand almost on one side of Israel and throw a rock across it. You can certainly launch most missiles all the way across, even handheld missiles all the way across. You know as well as I do, the president of Iran has come out in the last few years and said one of his goals is to wipe out Israel. Hitler, Syria, Egypt, the Philistines, take a name, call roll. And yet, 2013, there they stand. There they stand. They've pretty much only had one ally throughout history, and you live in that nation. God help us today, we're not their ally, by the way. They've tried in every way possible to conquer and destroy that little nation. And every time God has honored His promise of I'll bless those that bless them and curse those that curse them. This is not a history lesson. This is not a geography lesson. This is a God lesson. If God was faithful to His people of Israel and rescued them, don't you think He's big enough for you? I want to ask you to bow your heads this morning. I don't know what valley you're walking through. I don't know what hopeless situation you find yourself in. I don't know which birds have picked the meat off of your bones and left you feeling dry. But I know that the same God that restored Israel is still on the throne. I know the same God that had enough power to resurrect Jesus Christ from the dead and bring Him out of that tomb is still on the throne. And I know that nothing in my life or your life is too big for that God. Some of you need to come this morning. You need to kneel at this altar and say, Lord, I just want to thank You. I want to thank You for being there when my valley was dry. I want to thank You for being there when I didn't have an answer There was no signs of life. But Father, somehow I know that You intervened and You brought me through, and we walked through the valley of the shadow of death. Some of you here this morning, you need to come and say, Lord, I'm in a mess. I'm in a valley. I'm in a really dry place. And I need Your comfort. I need Your encouragement. Some of you may have a friend or a loved one who's in that valley, who's in that place. You want to come and pray for them. Our God is still in control. And if He could do what? If He could perform this miracle, if He could bring Israel back together, He can balance your checkbook. He can restore your marriage. He can save your children. Whatever God leads you to do this morning, thanking Him for getting you out of the valley, praying to get out of the valley, praying not to go to the valley, God's in control.